Hour 2 of that 590 show coming at you live right now on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com. Matt Berger, Matt Rocchio alongside Pablo, John Rudolph behind the dials. Your new nickname is now Pablo. It's no longer Giamatti. Way to go, Rocchio. I like this. The Belmont Automotive phone line is 855-282-8255. The text line also at 855-282-8255.
I'm going to call him Patron.
Patron? No.
That's what everyone calls him in the show.
Is Patron?
Because it's Spanish for boss.
For boss, okay.
They all call him Patron.
I thought it was for partner.
Patron.
Joining us right now on the Belmont Automotive phone line is the longtime NFL journalist. You can read him at BalzerFootball.com. Hear him on the NFL Hall of Fame show on the NFL channel on SiriusXM and follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. Howard, how are you and how was the birthday on Friday?
Birthday was very nice, very good. I am doing well, had a good weekend, and I am interested, though. I'm curious, because you were just talking about nicknames, and I think the biggest question of the day, since yesterday really, is whether Rodney Darnell Whitehead Jr. will change his nickname from Lucky.
Yeah, she changed it to Unlucky. That poor guy. And how bad does this make the Cardinals, the Cowboys look? That, oh, you know, Greg Hardy? Okay, yeah, no problem. We'll take him on board. And Lucky Whitehead, I understand that he hasn't exactly been an angel, but he's not exactly a criminal mastermind either. And then this thing, the whole incident about him, not showing up for a court date after being arrested for shoplifting, and it turns out it wasn't even him, and the Cowboys release him anyway. How does this make him look?
I think it makes him look pretty bad. And you mentioned Hardy. He's just one in a long list of suspensions that this team has had over the last few years. You know, with Rolando McClain and DeMarcus Lawrence, David Irving opens this season on a suspended list. And just in the last couple of months, Nolan Carroll, who they signed as a free agent, the cornerback, he was arrested for DUI. Damian Wilson, a linebacker, was arrested in early July. Jordan Lewis, one of their draft choices, jury trial started this week in Michigan on an assault charge. So it's just bizarre. And you know what's really crazy about it is the comment from Stephen Jones of the Cowboys, who said, well, this was a culmination of issues. It wasn't just one incident. Well, you know what, that's almost as laughable as when the Seahawks brought in Colin Kaepernick for a visit and then afterwards said, we're not signing him because he has the qualities to be a starter.
Yeah, he's too good.
We have a starter. Well, then why'd you even bring him in to begin with? Because you knew that about him already. Well, that's the thing here with Whitehead. If this incident doesn't happen, no matter what previous issues there might have been, he was still on the team.
He was a pretty good player for him last year as far as a slot receiver and a kick returner goes.
No, well, exactly right. And so now, having said all that, they did draft a guy this year, Ryan Switzer, who they believe was probably going to take Whitehead's job. And so he was in a battle for a roster spot. But who knows? Ryan Switzer could get hurt tomorrow in training camp for all we know. And so, you know, again, the point being is the usual double standard that exists with players when you're considered maybe a borderline guy, we're going to make an example of you. But again, don't feed that culmination of issues line when he was on the team, he was in training camp. Here's the thing about the Cowboys too, let's remember, they have training camp in California. So all the team had to show up Friday for physicals and a conditioning run. Then they got on a charter plane Saturday to go to California for training camp. And David Irving, one of the guys I just mentioned, who's suspended for the first four games of the year, blew off the conditioning run in the physical. He didn't show up on Friday. And yet, everything's okay with him. So it just smacks of ridiculousness. And maybe it's good for Whitehead. You know, he didn't go on waivers officially until today. And it'll be interesting to see now with what we know about the incident, whether another team picks him up on waivers. If they don't, he'll be a free agent, and we'll see what happens from there. The other bizarre thing, I don't want to spend the whole segment on Lucky Whitehead of all people, but the whole story, what's really odd about this, is that the guy who did this didn't have ID on him at the time and gave Whitehead's name, address, and social security.
Yeah, knew everything about him.
And then when the police claim they looked in the database and looked up Whitehead's driver's license, and the photos matched. So who knows? Maybe this guy has done kind of a identity theft.
Could very easily have been, yeah.
Yeah, who knows? So that's another bizarre part of the story. And right now, I mean, this thing happened, on June 22nd, I think it was, so it's more than a month, and they have no idea who or where this guy is.
Nate Davis, your colleague at USA Today, he has predicted the records for all 32 NFL teams, and he has the Dallas Cowboys finishing first in the NFC East at 11-5. I think that is very optimistic considering how many players on this team are going to be suspended, especially on the defensive side. And I think Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, I think they are two future superstars in the NFL, but I think they're going to take a little bit of a step back this coming year because they're not going to be taking anybody by surprise anymore. So I think 11-5 for the Dallas Cowboys is very generous.
It could be. I still think that, you know, they have the ability to be a 10 or 11 win team, but there are a couple of aspects of it that I agree with you on. And of course, even as good as that offensive line is, they're replacing Doug Free at right tackle, who retired. So that's a question mark. And like you said, on defense, they still don't have much of a pass rush. Yes, I know they drafted Taco Charlton, but you never know about a rookie coming in his first year. And then look at the losses that they have in the secondary, where Brandon Carr left, Barry starting corner, Morris Claiborne, backup corner, who played a lot of snaps, gone. Barry Church, starting safety, gone. So that defense has a lot of question marks. And then the other part of it is that this is a pretty tough division. The Giants, of course, were in the playoffs last year. The Eagles, I think, are going to be better. The Redskins, I'm not sure, because, and it's more than just the Kirk Cousins situation. It's the fact that can Cousins be as good as he has been with the loss of DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon at wide receiver who left? They did sign Terrell Pryor, but that's one guy. Now, I know they like Jamison Crowder. They have a real good tight end, Jordan Reed, if he can stay healthy. But there's some questions about the Redskins. But they still have some talent, and this team was 8-7-1 last year. So I think how good that division is a big factor. And then let's look at Ezekiel Elliott if he happens to be suspended for a game or two. Cowboys open against the Giants and then at Denver. And they're definitely not the same team without him. And so if they would get off to an 0-2 start, then, you know, who knows what might happen the rest of the way. So I think that division, though, will be one of the more interesting ones in the league.
I'm with you on that one. I think the New York Giants are going to win it, though. I love the addition of Brandon Marshall. That defense is good. If they could just find some semblance of a running game so Eli Manning doesn't throw until his arm falls off, I think the New York Giants, not only are they going to win, in my opinion, the NFC East, I think they could eventually be the representative of the NFC in the Super Bowl. It wouldn't shock me.
Well, and here's the thing about that. And some people might look at it, whoa, what are you talking about? Well, the thing I always say, and you guys know it, is that once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen. And, I mean, it's not a path like the other sports where you've got, you know, all these long seven-game series and it's a marathon in the playoffs. The NFL, hey, you win your division. If you're able to get a first-round bye, you only have to win two games to get to the Super Bowl.
It's the Patriot formula.
Yeah, exactly. If you're not, you still only have to win three, and we've seen enough of those teams in recent seasons that have been wild cards that had to win three games to get to the Super Bowl who have been able to accomplish it. So, you know, once you're there, I think, and especially in this conference where, you know, I don't know that there's one team that you look at and just say, oh, they're head and shoulders above everybody else. And so whoever the six are when the season ends, I think you could throw them all in a hat and pick one out of it, and that would be just as good a pick as any to get to the Super Bowl.
Howard Balzer joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. Sticking with this Nate Davis article, a couple of records that he predicted that I think you may get a kick out of. He has the New England Patriots going undefeated once again at 16-0, and he also has the Los Angeles Rams replicating the record of last year of 4-12. Which one do you think is most likely to happen?
Oh, definitely the Rams. There's not even an art discussion there. I'm sure. I mean, let's be honest. You make predictions. You never know how they're going to come out. When you predict a team to go undefeated, you're not doing it, in my mind, because you really believe it'll happen. You're doing it because if that unlikely thing happens, you can say, oh, I predicted it. Oh, I predicted it. Come on. I mean, go undefeated. Granted, this is a team that, when they've got it going, they rarely lose more than two or three games anyway. So is it that much of a stretch to say they would go undefeated? Maybe not. But, you know, they still have some landmines along the way in that schedule. You know, the division isn't great, as we know that. You know, but they play Kansas City. You know, they have Houston on the schedule, Atlanta. Chargers are an improved team. You know, they play that AFC West with also Denver and Oakland. And so, and then how about this? I don't know if people, when they predict records, if they actually look at the schedule and see how it plays out. They have three games in a row in early December on the road at Buffalo, at Miami on a Monday night, and then come back the following Sunday and have to go to Pittsburgh. So from all those games I just mentioned, aside from the division games, they're going to lose one or two of them. So, yeah, I think it's much more likely the Rams go 4-12. They still have huge question marks on that team, obviously, whether it's a running back on the offensive line and all those things. So they're just not a very talented roster.
Age, we got a question here on the text line from Delino DeShields asking, are there any rookies that Howard thinks we should keep an eye on? I guess the big ones there, and obviously not, you know, the guys who are clearly drafted to be starters, but hey, maybe some late first-round picks, second-round guys who have gotten a lot of buzz out of rookie camps and looking into training camp at a spot that might be a little light that they could attack.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, you know, obviously you never know with rookies. I think with Denver, it's very intriguing at their wide receiver position, where we know their top two guys obviously are Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, but then they drafted two guys in the third and in the fifth round at wide receiver, Carlos Henderson and Isaiah McKenzie, and you know, Henderson's probably going to return kicks too. So I think those are two guys to definitely keep an eye on. Oakland has a bunch of guys that they are counting on, especially on that defense, to step in and help make that better. They've got a real big question at middle linebacker, and there's some people saying that their fifth-round pick from Wake Forest, Markell Lee, could be a guy to watch in training camp. And so those are a couple, and you know, certainly there's always going to be a bunch that are going to have an impact, you know, from those later rounds. And, you know, I think in Pittsburgh, you know, who knows what happens with Le'Veon Bell, but I think that the Steelers maybe they don't want to give him as many carries this year to keep the wear and tear from hitting him. And James Conner, the running back from Pitt, who they picked in the third round, I think is a guy that could really contribute to that offense.
Heck, if I'm Le'Veon Bell, I hope they give him a couple carries, because if I'm going into an offseason where I'm trying to maximize a long-term deal, well, I want the yardage, obviously, to get the big numbers, but every team's going to be looking at that carry count when you're trying to get a four-year deal as a running back.
Well, no doubt, and I'm not saying he's not capable of doing that. I'm just saying from the Steelers' standpoint, you know, he's had some injuries. He's had those nicks that have affected him, especially late in seasons, and you definitely want another guy who can come in and get some snaps. I mean, last year, D'Angelo Williams, who was not re-signed, had 98 carries. Not a huge number, but that's still, you know, 5-6 a game. And so who knows? Maybe Connor gets a few more. And so that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying to reduce it appreciably, but just, you know, reduce it somewhat and get some other people the football. Because, and you know, the other part of it is, who knows how long he stays away from training camp. And that could affect it also in terms of how quickly he gets out there the start of the season when he hasn't had camp to really get into some football shape.
Which rookie do you think is going to have the toughest go?
Wow.
Is it going to be Myles Garrett in Cleveland? Because, I mean, it's Cleveland. It's the factory of sadness. I mean, is it going to be someone like, I think, Christian McCaffrey, I think he is a fit. I think he's going to be a pretty good player, but
there's
not a whole lot of talent around him on the Carolina Panthers team as far as an offensive line goes. I think that's where maybe he's going to struggle.
Well, although I'll say this about McCaffrey, and you're right about the line, they've got to get something settled. They did have some signings in the offseason that they think will help that line, but they're going to use him in a variety of ways. They're going to split him out, use him as a receiver, and I think he might end up having as much impact there as he does at a running back. Garrett's an interesting question because I think the big key there is how often, you know, it's hard to get sacks a lot of times as a pass rusher if your team is behind most of the time, because then you can't just peel back and rush the passer because you don't have the other team in a lot of those obvious pass rushing situations. And so, you know, we know a lot of pass rushers really start getting sacks at the end of the game when another team is trying to catch up. So, but I think he's going to be fine. He did have some injury throughout the offseason, which could affect him, but I think he's going to be able to, in time, be able to come in and be a darn good player on that team. And so, you know, in terms of some other guys, you know, Mike Williams, we have to keep a real close eye on, who the Chargers were really counting on. And there's been stories in the last couple of weeks that a back injury he suffered in rookie minicamp would, and Adam Schefter reported it, that he would need surgery and it might be season threatening. Well, he came out a few days ago and said, I don't know where people get these stories. That's not true. I don't need surgery. But the fact is, he didn't participate in off-season workouts at all. So you know that the Chargers are going to be very, very careful with him when their camp opens later this week. But he can obviously have a big impact on that team with Phillip Rivers at quarterback, but certainly he has to stay healthy.
And everybody saw how he took over that national title game against Alabama. I mean, it was him and Deshaun Watson just basically playing, you know, kind of like backyard football. I mean, it was just Deshaun Watson moving the pocket and scrambling and throwing the ball down the field and Mike Williams making a play. It was a lot of fun to watch. So you're right there about Mike Williams. He could be a difference maker, that's for sure. Howard, there was a study done at Boston University. They examined 111 brains from NFL players that had donated for CTE research, and of the 111, 110 were found to have CTE. What do you make of this information?
Well, I think it's still incomplete. We all know what the potential is for CTE, but unless you were able to test, let's go back 3 or 4 years and look at the, whatever it is, 3,000 to 4,000 plus players that have played in preseason games, played in regular season games, had constant pounding in practice, and to test everybody. You know, these were guys that came forward for this testing that have had some issues, have had some depression, and so you would think that, so it's not surprising that this would be found in all those guys. And, you know, it's kind of like some of the previous tests on brains, that had a large majority of them showing, you know, being positive for CTE. But it was only about, I think it was only about 80 or 85 that were tested. That's a very small sample size when it comes to the NFL population. And so obviously more research has to be done, more studies, all those things. But it's very difficult because I know they're trying to develop some things, but most of these tests occur when guys die, and then they can take the brain out and really look at them. Some of these, they've been finding ways to look for it, but you don't know the extent of it either. You know, that's another thing. We don't know how many just normal brains have some small amount of CTE that just occurs for a variety of reasons. So there is so much to learn from this. And so all I would say is I don't want to minimize, but I don't think there should be overreaction either.
And the NFL that these players, the majority of these players played in, doesn't exist anymore for the most
part.
True. The equipment's gotten better. There's been more precaution. They aren't banging heads as much in practice anymore. So the NFL that a lot of these players, and I'm assuming a lot of them played like in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, that NFL is long gone.
No, it definitely is. And obviously there's a lot more awareness. I can remember, because I'm such an old guy, I can remember way back in the 80s and 90s interviewing players, and they would talk the day after a game or a couple days later, and they talk about, quote, getting their bell rung in a game and not being able to remember stuff for a while. And it was like a joke.
Yeah.
Everyone was just joking around about it, thinking that, okay, it just happens, no big deal. Well, now we obviously know that it is a big deal. And, like I said, those days are gone. But the nature of the sport, there can be situations where the constant or even just jolting, landing on the ground, all those things can jostle your brain, but you don't suffer a concussion. But the accumulation of all that can create some issues that could manifest itself later. And those are all the things that all the scientists and all the researchers are trying to learn and find out.
Yeah, and another issue with that thought process about, this is the old NFL, is that we do have cases already of players in the new, in a new age NFL under the new rules. I mean, Javon Belcher played from 2009 to 2012, and they found CTE in his brain. He was the one who killed his girlfriend and then murdered himself in the parking lot of the team facility. So I think there is some proof already, though, that even now with the restrictions on tackling and practice and things like that, that even guys now who are playing are getting hit enough that CTE is developing.
Well, and let's remember too, the NFL gets the brunt of the criticism on this, but the NFL is the last stop in the player's career. These guys have been playing a lot of them since they're 10 years old.
Yes.
And when the brain is still developing, and granted, you're not as running as fast, you're not getting hit as hard, but you're still hitting the ground, there's still collision, there's still a lot of those things. Then there's high school football, college football, all of that, as I was talking about before, the accumulation of it over time just adds up. And so that's there. But when you think about it, and yes, we hear the horror stories. There's no doubt, no question about it. And they're sad and they're terrible. But just think of the numbers of people who have played football at any level. Just go back the last three or four decades. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that number is, but obviously it's in the hundreds of thousands, maybe even more than a million. And how many of those do we really see having an issue? And so it's not as if everybody is going to get a concussion. It's not as if everybody is going to have a problem later in life. And so those are the things that we all have to wrap our hands around.
I think another interesting part that wasn't described, it was broken down, but I think we can extrapolate some potential things from here, is that about 50 of the 100 were linemen as opposed to quarterbacks, defensive backs, wide receivers, running backs, what have you. And I think that's the interesting part is that, everyone, we're all having this conversation, and a lot of times a lot of people, especially people who talk about rugby, want to bring up that a big problem is the open field hits, the fact that it's fast-paced and players are lowering their head and things like that. They want to bring that up as the big problem, but clearly, when you look at how big the percentage is when you talk to linemen, the other thing that's brought up, the multiple three or four times your head gets jostled every play when you're defensive or offensive lineman, that clearly, the constant little ones, that clearly is as big or a bigger problem than the big open field hits that a lot of people have decided to highlight.
And no, you're 100% right about that, Matt. And no question in terms of that, that trench warfare, whatever we want to call it, there's the number of plays that go on in a game, and those guys are involved in it offensively and defensively every play. I mean, a lot of other players on the field some things don't even happen, on their plays. On certain plays, whether if you're a wide receiver or if you're a defensive back, whatever it might be. But those linemen, you're right, they're banging every single play of every game, and especially the offensive linemen, for the most part, they're on the field for every play. Maybe there's an injury or something else, but for the most part, unless there is something like that or they're not playing well, they're out there for every play.
Yeah, they don't rotate out like the D-line does.
Exactly. And when we talk about this larger conversation, which is, where is football 10 years down the road, I wonder if we're going to get to the point where now things like 7-on-7 or 8-on-8 football isn't something that's just being played in Montana or Alaska at the high school level, where that becomes a much more pervasive style of football, especially in high school, because we hear people talking about how you shouldn't be playing tackle football until 16 or 18 years old. I wonder if that's where we'll see it, not necessarily taking away all hitting out of the game completely, but maybe taking away the lines part to eliminate that part while keeping the more shell game on the outside a little bit more true to what it is now.
No question. That's that could end up being the case, because let's remember too, that isn't talked about a lot on the high school level, how many guys play both ways.
Yeah.
A lot of those linemen are playing both offensive and defensive linemen during high school games. Now, granted, there's not as many snaps and all those things, but still the accumulation of it over a season, even though it's a shorter season, certainly, you would think would have an effect.
Training camp is opening up over the next few days for all 32 NFL teams. Football is in the air. Next thing you know, it'll be the Hall of Fame game and the preseason games and then the regular season. And thank God football will be back. I am ready for it, Howard. I know you are too.
No doubt about it. You said right around, next week is the Hall of Fame game. It's 9 days away with the Cardinals and the Cowboys. And, I'll be heading to Canton next Wednesday for the weekend. And of course, looking forward to that, but you're right. It's here. Although I'll say this: as soon as those first week of, and it happens every year, as soon as that first week of preseason games are played, we're all going, okay, let's get to the regular season.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, because preseason football is so worthless. Yeah, I don't know about you. Like last year, like with the Rams gone, it was kind of like it still kind of stung and it still didn't kind of seem real. I don't know what it is. Like this year, it seems like it's hurting more that the Rams aren't here. Not necessarily because I miss the organization that much, but just having an NFL team in town to talk about and stuff like that, it just seems a little more depressing this year than it did last year. I don't know about you.
Now, interesting you say that, because it'd be interesting to hear from a lot of fans and a lot of people, because I think I'm sure there's many that feel the same way you do. There might be others that say, okay, time starts to heal wounds, and so now it's a year removed from it. It doesn't feel quite as bad, although it still is obviously a huge void in town, but you get a little more used to it. So I'd be very curious what a lot of people think. And from my standpoint, I just roll. I'm busy enough doing everything. Obviously, I miss it. But I'll tell you one thing. It's in all the things I have going on, there's something to be said for not being out at Rams Park for 4 or 5 hours every day in training camp. I'm able to get a lot of other things done that in the past really started to pile up. So in some ways it's been good, but obviously still miss having a team in town. There's nothing like that.
Well, we look forward to your insight all NFL season long, training camp, preseason, even fantasy. Howard, I know you're a big fantasy football guy, too. We're looking forward to all of it. Thank you for your time, sir. We look forward to talking to you next week.
Look forward to it, man. Take care.
Thanks, bye. Howard. That is Howard Balzer from BalzerFootball.com and the Hall of Fame show on the NFL channel on SiriusXM. You can follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. Let's take a commercial break. You're listening to That 590 Show right here. 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com. I think I need to let her loose. Let her loose. She only want me for my pimp juice. That's all she want me for. Not my pimp juice. I'm talking.